It's Wednesday, June 25th, 2008, and you're listening to episode 105 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 58 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
My name is Chad.
And my name is Corey Clean Colon.
Chris.
And I have a bone to pick with you, Mr.
Yeah, go for it. Come on, bring it on. Bring it on, ass man.
Just keep the chemical warfare out of it this time, huh?
Bring it on. Don't bring it out.
No, I have a little retort.
Let her rip.
All right, I'll let it rip here. I'm going to drop this and no.
Tear into Dan.
I will admit.
I think there's trouble on the winds here.
And it's blowing south, if you know what I mean. I've always been a person who will always gladly admit who was responsible for it, except for that one time in Germany when I left a huge heaping pile in some guy's toilet. But I will
Stop. Tell this story before we continue our fight.
All right. Well, this was back my senior year in high school, and I took German when I was in high school.
Germany were you in when you were in high school?
It was just West Germany.
I thought so.
There was one guy in our group who was able to go over to East Berlin, but he had to get all kinds of special papers. Anyway, but no. So we were in, I don't remember what city it was, but it was near the end of our journey when we were there, and I ended up in one of our groups, and we went with a bunch of other schools from around the state. So most of these people I did not know, and so we were in this one group's room, and we're kind of hanging out there talking and stuff. And of course, because you're in Germany, you're of age at that point when you're in senior high school, so you can drink. So I was intoxicated.
When you're five.
And I excused myself to the bathroom, took care of some serious, serious business, and discovered that the toilet was broken.
Was it broken before or after you got there?
No, it was broken before, but I didn't realize it until
after. Were you
after.
Dropping bombs like it was 1945?
Oh my gosh. It was some serious schnitzel, if you know what I'm saying. So anyway.
The real Dresden Files.
So I after I did that and realized the toilet was broken, I'm like, I've got to get out of here. This is not a good situation. I don't want to admit to this. And fortunately, I could get out of that particular hotel room without going through the main living area. So I did. And I didn't see those people for the rest of the evening. Well, the following day, we were in a bus station or something, and one of the room's occupants came up to me and immediately accused me that it was me. And I said, what? She goes, you're the one who left that huge crap pile in the toilet from last night. And of course, I took the standard man's way out and deny. And I continued to deny. She looked square in the eye. I put my best lie face on, and I just totally kept an eye. I said, swear it wasn't me. Yes, I was in your room last night. We were all hanging out in there, but that was not me. I would never do that.
And you did.
And I totally did, but she totally bought it. So that was the best thing about that. But to get back to the original point, I listened to, of course, at least that part of last week's episode, where you know the now famous incident occurred, and I had to go back.
What was it, 52:48?
57:28.
57:28.
57:28. In fact, is going to be a forum title on the new forums.
Nice. It'll be just like 4:20, except smellier. But I was curious because I thought, you know, I know it was loud, but I didn't think it was that loud.
It was loud.
I went back and listened to my original cut, so to speak. And it was nowhere near the level that you clearly had amped it up to.
Dude,
I did not amp it.
We heard it across the headphones, across the internet first, and then about 5 seconds later, we heard it roll over the hills of the Midwest to the house.
Look, Chris, let me put you this way. Let's start by giving you some sense of the scale of what you did. You are sitting there on a mic that's not designed to pick up noise as far from the mic. You're on a cardioid dynamic mic.
Yes.
We heard it not only over that mic, but over Skype's crappy connection as well.
This is just a testament to my ultimate true power.
Yes.
See, 1 minute's my fault, the next minute it's your true power. This is either a point of pride or a point of accusation. But now, I did not amplify that one stinky bit. If you want to blame anything in the process, because of the way somebody's...
Blame your wife's cooking.
Well, that too. But because of the fact that we don't have a compressor for you yet, I have to normalize your sound wave.
It's not good to compress too much.
I do my best. This is one of the advantages of being a manager at work, and I have an office, and so I can take care of that kind of business all day long.
Even your Gmail thing, when you're away, it says... What does it say?
Secretly farting into my office chair.
Yeah, secretly farting in my chair or something like that. And
hey, everybody poops.
Because you don't have a compressor, I have to run your sound wave through a tool called Levelator, which all it does is it just balances out. It brings the loud noises down, the quiet noises up.
It picks out the farts and it amplifies them loudly. So adds a nice deep bassiness to them.
There was no active hand of mine in what happened. I did.
Thank God.
I did.
Yeah, really. You get your hand out of there. You're as powerful as your hair is, you are no proctologist.
I had to reach in there and open the airways. But that was
gross. You delivered birth to an air elemental.
But there was no special work done there. It's not like I took the sound wave and amped it up 5 decibels to make it funnier. Whatever occurred there occurred in the just natural process of the way I handle all the sound files you send me.
Well, Chris, you said you've always wanted to be famous. Now you are.
I truly am. I truly am famous now, and I'll be known for this forever. And it's, but you know what? Hey. To those listening and just holding back that little bit of throw up in their mouth, I have to say though that this is truly, it's one of the benefits, so to speak, of a high fiber diet. So I encourage you.
You know, you write a bunch of BattleTech books. You know, you're involved in the community, you have a whole bunch of great kids, you have a wonderful marriage, you have a nice career, but you let one rip on Fear the Boot.
Hey man, right. If a man builds 1,000 bridges and sucks one, he's not a bridge builder.
That's right, one earth-shaking fart and nobody will ever forgive you again.
Precisely. Right. If we were to take a poll of our Fear the Boot listeners and get them to fill in the blanks of what they knew about you, probably the single highest item we would get back is 5728.
You have a high-fiber diet.
We could evolve this into some sort of Fear the Boot shirt, maybe 5127 or something like that, or just says that on the front.
We could find the latitude and longitude of 5127 and declare that the capital city is 5728. Whatever.
We should put 5728 on the front of the shirt and on the back. Say, just when you think Fear the Boot can't get any classier, it doesn't.
No, it's Fear on the back of the shirt. It says Fear the Boot says, "Do not stand here." Or if you're reading this, it's already too late.
Well, we've been on Fear the Toot for about 7.5 minutes here. Do we have anything else to say?
Okay, yeah, we do. All right, let's get on with the show we're supposed to be doing instead of the show that Chris is just letting loose. I want to send a shout out to a gentleman on our forums by the name of Halbert who lives here in St. Louis. And I actually, at some point in my life, knew a guy by the name of Halbert in St. Louis.
Yeah, we did.
But I don't think this is the same guy.
Maybe. Well, I hope not. We didn't part on good terms.
I don't know. Well, if it is, then he's forgiven us, and so all is well. So I guess either way, it's good.
Yeah.
But he sent me in a code for something in Age of Conan. So specifically, it's an item that teleports me back to a home city.
The PC Gamer.
Yeah. Cool. So I want to send a shout out thanking Mr. Halbert for getting me that code, because that's been a big help to me. Also want to respond to something. We've been looking through the feedback on what we talked about with the show changes last episode, and we're not going to spend 30 minutes on it again. So
now we're going to spend 40 minutes on it.
Don't cringe too much. But real quick, some people were kind of confused by something where we talked about that.
No, it was one person.
Okay, well, but he raised
it. Yeah, and it was a good point.
Well, I say some people because, honestly, I even kind of thought about this myself when I was editing the episode. That we talk about how that critical deconstruction show we're going to do is not a review show. But then when we define it, we almost define a review show. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of want to explain a little bit about why it's not a review show. I realize if you take the verb review and you look it up in a dictionary, it fits what we're doing. So in that sense, it is a review show. But if you look at its common meaning, when you go get a review show, they get a review copy of something and they take it apart, kind of say, hey, you ought to pick this up because or not pick it up because.
Yeah, this really sucked. Don't go see it.
Right.
This really was great. You should buy this book or whatever.
And that's the angle we're taking. Is more of a post-mortem where we're assuming you've already read it, seen it, consumed it.
And if you haven't, you know, we don't care if you do or not. We'll say whether or not we like it, you know, because we're really opinionated, vicious people with cold black hearts, but we're not trying to give advice on whether or not product X or media X should be consumed or not.
Because one of the things people said they like about Fear the Boot is it feels like they're sitting around a table with a bunch of their friends kicking around RPGs. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to do the same thing with broader media. We are not trying to preview anything.
Right.
And most review shows are actually preview shows. Mm-hmm. And that's not what we're trying to do. It's more the same thing as Fear the Boot. We're going to sit around and kick around a subject, a set of role-playing games. It's going to be some piece of popular media.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is technically in the dictionary sense a review. But once again, that's not how a normal review show works. So that's why we stand by our description of saying it's not a review show. Mm-hmm. Now, along those lines, Chad, it's going to be a couple weeks yet before we release the first episode. But did you want to preview the first preview? Here we go again. I'm shooting myself down. Did you want?
We're going to give it a rating system between 1 and 5 stars.
Okay, or, excellent. You
know, 1 and 5 thumbs up or thumbs.
But
down.
Did you want to give people a heads up on the first two things we're going to talk about?
First two things we're going to talk about, and if you have not read at least the first one, I heartily recommend you do. We're going to be doing Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns,
right. A
comic book, graphic novel. You can probably go into any Barnes & Noble or any bookstore, comic book shop, and they probably have a copy if you don't have it already. And when we do the show, we're going to talk about it, like, fully, beginning to end. We're going to give away the ending. We're going to talk about the... We're not going to be limiting ourselves by, well, I don't want to talk about that to give away the ending. We're going to completely spoil it for you. So either... I hate to say this, don't listen to the show if you haven't read it and don't want to be spoiled, but we highly recommend read in the time between now and or when you listen to this and that show, go and read Dark Knight, Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns, and then you can kind of follow along with us and either vehemently disagree with us and write us about it and tell us what kind of idiots we are, or you know, hopefully you'll agree with us.
Right. And if it's Tony, we'll just delete the emails as they come in. So.
Yes.
Spoiler, The Dark Knight Returns is good.
Yeah. And he's like, it's not Superman.
He's just mad Superman gets his ass beat. But
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
The second thing we're going to do, and this is going to be the show after this, and good luck in finding a copy of this.
Well, sort of. And I'll say what it is, okay. And then I'll give something out here.
I don't know who wrote it. I don't know what company produced it, so I can't give you all that nice information. But it is the Justifiers RPG.
Right. It's an independent RPG we have talked about having played quite a while back. And someone, and I will credit this person in the show notes because I don't have my private messages pulled up in front of me, but someone sent me in a PM a link to a Savage Worlds conversion someone has done of Justifiers. So Justifiers was a great RPG.
Yeah.
If you are able to pick it up.
I swear we're not furries.
That's one of the things we're going to talk about is how we can enjoy that game and not consider ourselves furries. But if you do not have any ability to pick it up.
Wait, is it a furry game?
Yeah, kind of.
Sort of anthropomorphic.
You guys are furries.
It's
weird.
Anthropomorphic sci-fi game.
That's kind of sketchy.
Yeah.
So you're funny on the show.
All right. So you should check it out.
But if you can't find a copy of it at the discount bin of your RPG shop or on eBay, and if you can pick it up, I'd recommend it. But if you can't, there's a Savage Worlds conversion of it that has a lot of the setting information. And I will link that in the show notes, probably off of this show. And of course, again, when we get to that episode of that other show, so you guys are able to follow along because the rules will be a little bit different, but the basic concept is still going to be the same.
And pretty much we're going to be talking about the concepts and less about the crunch, or at least I will be, because I don't care about the math. But Dan, something people are asking on the forums about these new shows is they're asking what the name of the shows are. And they're coming up with names themselves, like Fear the Review and Fear the Writing. So
I'm holding off on giving the names because actually we have them picked out.
Mm-hmm.
They do not have Fear Thee in the title for the simple reason that these really, while it's one family of shows because there's a... Let's go back to a Venn diagram.
Oh.
If you have a Venn diagram with people on any of these three shows, there's a large overlap in the middle of it. But I don't want to give out the names just yet because I know there are a handful of people listening to the show that as a prank would run out and reserve those show names. And there's probably, sadly, one or two people listening to the show who just to be an Oracle will run right. out and reserve those show names.
Well, I'll give you a hint. Instead of fear the, all of them start with be trepidatious of.
Yes, that is 100% right. But we will announce those at the time the new site release. Which,
mildly worried about the.
Which is going to occur here very soon. This is all going to, as we said on the last show, this is all going to occur in a matter of weeks, not months. All right, down to the actual show now that we've talked about.
Brass tacks, we are under the half hour mark
from last week.
Can I just do one minor vent?
If it's 15 minutes, no.
And out of your top
Don't
side.
Don't call it a news item, just talk and we're good.
Okay, I'm moderately miffed at the fact that Worldwide D&D Day and Free RPG Day are so close together.
Wait, when's Worldwide D&D Day?
That was like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and then it's when they kind of had debuted 4th edition.
And then
Free RPG Day was June 26th or something like that. So
no, it was like Saturday. Last Saturday, yeah.
Yeah, it was
the previous Saturday. And does D&D really... close together.
Does D&D really need its own separate?
Well, I mean, I really, their marketing department seems to.
Yeah,
think so.
I mean, I really,
if you want to give everybody a module for free, you're free to do it.
I don't fault them for the marketing effort. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing for them to do, and a great way to try and expand the hobby. Good for them. That's great. It just bothers me that it's so damn close together.
You know, I was going to go to a gaming shop on Free RPG Day. I was actually going to. I looked up a list of stuff, and then I was like. You know, if I go, I'll be late to John's grad party.
Yeah, and there's a pony keg of Budweiser at John's house.
Yeah, there was a pony keg, there was brandy slushes, and there was bocce ball.
There was bocce ball.
So
I dated brandy slush in high school.
Really?
Yeah.
This was actually a bourbon slush, but it's close. It's a sticky, sweet, whiskey-like, icy, slushy thing. It's actually
pretty
nice.
Yeah, that sounds like her. But anyway, okay, yes, please, by all means, go on to the show. Don't let the other hosts stop you, Dan.
Talking real quick about Free RPG Day before we get into it, though. Like Chad, I was at John's graduation party, so I missed out on it.
You were like, I don't want to go because I hate the RPG community.
Well, the one thing,
I fear the boot.
I don't think this would take any genius to figure out. There was one product, though, that I really wish I had picked up. Which is that free module they're handing out.
For Hunters.
Yeah.
Hunter the Vigil.
Yeah.
I told you, man, we could have gone, but then we were both like, we hate the RPG community. There's a free pony keg.
Well, and you know, we can also credit ourselves for doing a great service because by not taking a copy, we left more for people that are not.
Yeah, totally.
There you go.
And I'm sure there's absolutely no way any of us could possibly get anything from White Wolf.
You've now secured your martyrdom, Dan, so now you'll have 72 virgin dice when you go to heaven.
Excellent. 72 previously unrolled dice, all facing up on their highest number, sorted by color and by denomination, just as the voodoo demands.
Dan, you're getting weird about this one.
I've seen his dice rituals, man. He's been scary for years on this.
All right.
Do you know that I used to purposely put my dice on their lowest number?
To piss him off?
Just to piss him off,
That's funny.
It never worked, but it amused me.
Yeah, I still roll.
You didn't see it work. No, I bet it worked.
That's true. He could have been fuming on the inside. He's like, okay, guys, you know, here's where the Warhammer moves. But on the inside, he's like, I will kill you.
I love how when I GM, I'm one part Poindexter, one part the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah. And then it comes together like a Dan Venn diagram to be you.
Okay.
Don't make me command this lance. You wouldn't like me when I command a lance.
That actually, you know, may work. So I have to work on, think about that one.
Poindexter and Hulk come together to form Bedroom Boys.
This is something that we talked about very briefly in previous shows, but never really have developed as a full topic.
Or have experienced the acute pain of.
No.
Dan and I have.
You have?
We have. And I haven't. I don't know that I would describe this as acute pain.
I would.
Let's introduce the topic then.
And heroin in gaming.
Oh, there's no acute pain there whatsoever. I mean, maybe for the first second or two.
Prick,
yeah, a little.
Finally enhances my gaming sessions.
But I mean, if you let a little prick keep you away from anything, there's nothing in life you can do anymore. So, especially not go to a convention with Harlan Ellison. I mean, good.
Dan at fearthevoot.com.
Anyway, I still need to get that.
You need the video of that.
I know.
Speech,
I need
dude.
That damn. Except Adam,
he's coming over Thursday.
Yes,
ride his ass about it.
I'm not going to do that, but I will tell him to bring over the Adam. I know you listen to the show. Bring the damn DVD so I can post online John's acceptance speech.
That is probably the most magnificent speech I've
ever.
Yes, yeah. We get bugged about it in PMs.
Really?
Dude.
Yeah, uh-huh. We get bugged about this all the time. The problem is we don't have the DVD, so there's nothing we can do.
So episode 100, Chris.
Okay, so getting on to the game, the main topic for today.
The editor.
That one I might be more responsible for. So getting on to today's main topic, which is what we keep trying to start here and keep failing at, gaming with kids.
Yes.
Now,
and not the 12-year-old that's like, hey, can I play in D&D
right.
and gets it and it's cool.
Well, I do want to talk about that, but I want to divide this into two subtopics.
We'll start younger and then go to older.
Let's start with gaming with kids, as in you are trying to game in a household and there are young children there, maybe the kids of one of the people you're gaming with, who are... let's call it for what it is, a distraction, okay, you know, because they're kids.
I have an 18-month-old. I understand.
Fully understand, right.
Yes.
The second topic we'll talk about is we will talk about introducing kids into gaming that are of the proper age. But that let's make that a second and distinct topic here, because obviously there's not a whole lot of...
Do you know how I get around it?
With the first one?
Yes. My
a leather
wife...
belt.
No, my wife... watches my child for me and lets me go to gaming at someone else's.
All right, that works great until both husband and wife are in the group.
Well,
she wants to game, but then
here's,
she doesn't.
Here's so. Basically...
She always craps out of games, dude.
Yes, she does.
I have no pity for her.
I don't either, really.
Here's how my view on this has changed. When I was younger, it was real easy to say, you know what, gaming with a little kid around just doesn't work.
I'm younger.
Yeah,
I'm saying that.
Exactly. And
that was the first time last game when I really sat down, said to myself, I am too young for this.
But find somebody to watch the kid game somewhere else. But here's the inescapable fact of where I'm at in my age. The vast majority of friends that I have either have kids, are currently pregnant.
It would be like,
or intend to have kids in the very near future.
It'd be like if
you
were single.
Making them directly in front of you.
It'd be like if you were single.
Some of those stories too, but we won't tell them.
It'd be like if you're single and dating. There's no way you would be able to find a woman who didn't have a kid. I mean, a very, very low likelihood.
Right. So it's I'm kind of at the point now where it's like, all right, I've moved past the it's something unacceptable to. And I had this realization even as we were gaming this past Thursday. It was the Danvers game that Christina and my brother-in-law, Adam, are playing in. And so, of course, they have to bring their 18-month-old son, that's English, Elijah, and...
Perfectly good kid.
Yeah, he's a perfectly good kid.
But he's 18 months
old. He's 18 months old. And because he's 18 months old, there are times when he gets distracted, not because he's a bad kid, not because he's doing anything outrageous, not because he's undisciplined, but just because he's an 18-month-old kid. And, you know, so...
He wanders off, and mom or dad has to wander off and get him.
Right, or he... sits at the table and bangs something on the table, you know, and starts cooing or whatever, just because that's what little kids do. And there was a point where I kind of had to reach this internal change where it's like, you know, if I hit this point where it's like, I'm going to be snooty about this and say, I'm not going to game with anyone who has kids, the list of people I can game with is going to get really, really small. And it's going to cut out a lot of people that I enjoy gaming with. And so I kind of had this hit this point where it's like, you know, I just have to learn to tune it out.
Yeah.
And now there was a point, particularly during the first hour or two that they came over, where
do you have any like specific stories? Like, you know, the kid flipped over your refrigerator, ate your cat or something.
Well, I certainly do. I mean, as far as, because Dan, my situation is exactly like yours with my previous group. That's what it was. We went through those stages where nobody had kids. Then suddenly, you know, slowly but surely, you know, kids were popping out left and right. And as you travel from house to house gaming, you would just encounter that. Now, and to be quite honest, Chad, actually, you're right. For most of my situations, my wife did take care of the kids during the gaming and kind of kept them out of the way. But at other houses, it wasn't necessarily that way. And so you just kind of got used to the fact that they were there. But it does affect things. It definitely affects your play style. You know, you may not be as demonstrative at the table. Your language certainly comes into play or gets checked at the door. And you may not be nearly as salty as you might like to be under normal circumstances. And it does. It alters it. And, yeah, sometimes the kids, they do interfere. They walk through the map or, you know, they come by and they'll grab some of your dice or something like that. And they, you know, they do adjust things. They do cause adjustments.
You know, actually, along those lines, you're talking about adjusting your language. I remember, and this would have been many years ago, like 1998, so I'm probably good 10 years ago, I was running a game. It was Chad was in it. I think Tim was in it. I was dating a girl who had two very young kids. And there came a point in the game where I had a pseudo PC NPC. I had an NPC that was in the party.
I hate those.
So
I saw you try to drop one of those in our game.
Oh, no, actually, I had no interest in dropping one in your game. Right, it's kind of like, well, if it was necessary, I was going to do it.
I'm not dropping anything right now.
Yeah.
Thank God.
But there came a point where my character and Chad's character got in a yelling match.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Chad and I, this was not an issue of game drama spilling over into the real world.
Right,
well, yeah, that's settled. This
oh, yeah.
This was not one of those issues of, like we talked about in a previous show, this was not character tension spilling over into player tension. This was 100% in character. Neither of us was angry at the other about anything, but we were really into the role playing and we were yelling at each other. And all of a sudden, this 3-year-old girl breaks down and starts screaming and crying.
Yeah.
Because she could not understand that
it was all pretend.
Yeah, that it was pretend, that we weren't really fighting. And of course, Chad and I both being, you know, over 6 feet tall,
yeah,
you know, booming voices. Both of us can really project our voices when we want to. I can understand from the standpoint of a 3-year-old why this was a scary display.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to stop and be like, okay, we can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
That we have to do the whisper yells or something can't be this into
My
it.
Character is yelling to you.
Right. I don't think I've ever flown into anger at the table. Like, even
I don't think you've ever actually flown into anger.
That's true, too. Well, I have, but like
kids
twice.
Kids definitely do. They break that fourth wall, and they definitely do bring about the interruptions. You know, and you can argue about the goodness, you know, or badness of it. I mean, you know, your example is a perfect example because really you say, oh, no, we can't do that anymore. Well, now you're being denied some excellent role-playing opportunities. I mean, that's a juicy RP moment right there that in that setting with the children around, you're probably not going to be able to get to do that again.
Right. You know? Yeah, but my thing is
the inevitability of life.
Well, my thing is, big whoop, you game once a week, once every 2 weeks, but a child enriches your life for the rest of your life.
Well,
so, you know,
as someone who doesn't have kids, I guess even the way I look at it is I don't even have to take this as a pro kid or anti kid thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the inevitability of life.
Yeah, that's what I was going to nail you on in a second here, Dan. You're not saying there's a good way to deal with this or that it can be converted into an asset. You're just saying that it's there and try to ignore it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think when they're a little older, that it can kind of be converted into an asset. Well, you know, they can get you beers and then you can.
And I do have some ideas
a little
on
bit.
How you can at least try and work around it that we'll get to here in a second. And I'm sure.
But we're talking like the 18-month-old or the 2-year-old or 3-year-old.
But even at the 18-month-old, I think there are some things you can do. And I'm sure Chris is probably going to have some ideas as well, having himself gone through this. But it's just the inevitability of life. Chad, like you were saying, there comes a point where that first guy in your group gets a girlfriend. And he's busy all the time or always brings the girlfriend around. That messes up gaming.
Oh, the girl who doesn't want to be there.
But
the girl who doesn't want to be there is 10 times worse than the 2-year-old.
I would take 2 screaming 2-year-olds and game through that rather than 1 quiet little waif-like heroin chic girl sitting next to me. Totally uncomfortable, not saying a word, but just emanating these uncomfortable, I don't want to be here waves.
Right.
Oh
yes, yeah, Chad, you're absolutely right. I would too. That becomes more of a distraction.
And that can be a guy too, to all our listeners.
Dan,
really, for like the 18-month-old child situation and things like that, it really kind of comes down to one of the things that it really comes down to is a rule that, you know, you've mentioned many times. You know, don't be an ass. You know, yes, this person's child, your host's child, may be causing you issues with their distractions and what they're doing, but yeah, it's one of those eventualities of life. You have to deal with it. You have to accept it. You know, they're there. And if you want to retain this person as a friend, you definitely don't go in being grumbly about the person's kid.
Well, and let me throw something in there as well, just as a quick side note, because I think this needs to be said. Now, this is not an issue in my current situation, but I have been here in the past. If your kid is causing problems because they are undisciplined.
Yeah, that's a little different.
Yeah. And I want to step out and say this now, because I've been in this situation as well, where I'm trying to game and camp because somebody's kid is a hellion, not a natural little kid, but an undisciplined little jerk. And let me make plain right now, I am not in any way,
you
shape,
are not
or form,
in any way above backhanding that little brat.
I am not. Well, I think we get transmitted in the state of California, so I can't talk about spanking. But I am not at all justifying that situation, because that's bad parenting. Yeah. But one of the things, getting to what you can do,
and it's a discourteous host.
Well, yeah. Yes. Well, it's a discourteous.
Well, whoever the parent is.
Yeah. Yes. A host, guest, whatever. Now, fortunately, that's not the case at all that I'm dealing with right now. But my recommendations is, one thing that I found is it's a conscious choice. You just have to choose on some level to tune it out. Mm-hmm. I am amazed all the time when I go to hear public speakers, wherever it may be, who they can have someone in the audience who's talking on a cell phone, a little kid screaming, whatever it may be, and they can just keep on talking like nothing's happened, totally undistracted.
Yeah. Well, I love the ones where it kind of tangent off. I love watching on YouTube the videos of the politicians who get heckled, and then they turn it around on the hecklers. There's some great Clinton footage, Bill Clinton footage. Hillary hasn't done too much, but some George Bush Sr. stuff. He got heckled a lot, and he turned it right around on him. Reagan did it great, too.
Of course he did.
Yeah, well, yes.
Well, I guess you can't really do that with an 18-month-old, but,
no.
But the point being, though, you make...
But an 18-month-old isn't going to heckle you. He's going to come up and bite you.
Yeah, you make some conscious effort to just kind of tune it out. But the second thing is, look, they're however old, cater to that.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, for example, I knew that this child was going to be over at my place. So one of the things that I did was Koplow Games, K-O-P-L-O-W, sells these bulk dice things. It's like these 2 or 3 inch across dice that are made out of completely out of foam.
Yeah, somebody gave Sky one.
They have all kinds of educational things on. They have animals, they have numbers, they have plus signs, minus signs, all kinds of different educational stuff.
And they can't be choked on or cut
right
with.
And what I did was I got in touch with a gaming store and said, hey, I see you guys are a distributor for this. This is not something that's supposed to be sold to the public. It's supposed to be a rack item that people buy dice out of. But I said, look, I see you're a distributor. Go ahead and mark it up and sell me the whole container. And they did. And so now all of a sudden, this little boy, when he comes over to game, now has dice of his own. He doesn't need to grab my dice because he's got his own dice. And even if he doesn't understand what they are at 18 months old, he can still play blocks with them or whatever it is he's going to do. There was one point where he had a plastic six-sider that he was doing that little thing where little kids do where they like pound their hands on the table.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. What we did was we went and we got a little padded, something you put on your table to like insulate against hot pans and such. Mm-hmm. And it's foam and, you know, a quarter of an inch thick or so.
Thick enough to mute baby pounding.
Yeah, it was enough to mute the pounding of the dice. And then we just kept on going. But we just, the same way you would adjust your game to any other situation, you like, for example, if you're in an apartment, you can't scream when you're excited. You have to hold your voice down. And it's the same thing here. We just accept, okay, this is an inevitability
of life.
We've gotten
noise complaints from gaming
before. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure.
Oh, we've gotten.
I have received and registered in turn noise complaints at my senior apartment when I was up at SLU until just recently.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
We got noise complaints actually even at
I have no
once.
Floor and I must scream.
You got noise complaints? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, remember? Yeah. So we vandalized the guy's yard to make up for it. Which wasn't real mature or legal, but...
Well, we were stupid teenagers.
Yeah, and the statute of limitations is passed on that, so who's the same thing we're going
to
do?
That does lead in, though, too, Dan, to the whole responsible parenting thing. If, you know, if you are the host and your kids, you know, are going to be the kids that are in question, you've got to provide some way for them to be entertained for the bulk of the time that you're gaming. Or if, you know, for whatever reason, if you're actually bringing kids over to someplace, somebody else's house, you've also, again, you've got to bring something to keep that kid distracted. You got to consider the adults that are there too. I mean, yes, kids definitely need to be paid attention to and given things to distract them and entertain them, but you're going to this house or you're hosting for a very specific purpose. And it's not to cater to that child. It's to have people come over to play games. And you've got to be conscious of that fact and realize that, you know, that you've got to balance out that who gets most of that attention.
Exactly. You can't be a full-time babysitter and in the game. What is truly going to hang up the game is when an adult is lost to the tending of the kid.
Yeah.
Chris, let me ask you, you have four kids, right?
That is correct.
How old is the oldest?
The oldest is 16 now.
And how old is the youngest?
The youngest is 6.
Okay. So you've had, you know, a child who's in the toddler age as recently as like 3 years ago.
Yep.
Have you ever been excluded from a gaming group because you have kids?
No. No, it's never been an issue. And even when my youngest was of that real toddler age and, you know, we were gaming at my place, she would come down. And, you know, it was one of those things where it was very well established that, yep, absolutely, you can come down, you know, but dad's over here and he's gaming with his friends. You can come down and watch, but you know, let's be quiet. Don't talk to dad very much. You're more than happy to sit there and watch. And they would, you know, they would stand there and they'd watch, but eventually realizing that they can't talk and they really are not supposed to be interrupting, then they'd get bored and they'd leave.
Yeah, and even if you know everything about gaming, it's boring as hell to watch somebody else do it.
Gaming is not a spectator sport, even for a little kid.
Absolutely. And, you know, and occasionally I would have them there and they would occasionally roll the dice for me or whatever. But it was just one of those things where they knew that this is what was going on and these are the people who are involved. And so, yeah, you're not involved. You're just a spectator. So you can stand here and watch, but you can't really interfere that much because, you know, you don't want to break the flow, kid. So that's kind of the way it goes.
What about older kids getting away from the toddler, two-year-old mark? What about kids who are like 5 or 6 who can talk and reason to some extent? And
I have a couple opinions on that. Certainly they're fun to game with, but I have always had a problem when there is a kid of that age sitting at a table with you. When I was still up in Minnesota, we did a lot of Living Blackmore. And one of the guys in the group, he had his kid would play often, and he was, I can't remember exactly his age, but he was under 10 years old. And so we had this group of 4 or 5 adults and this one, you know, we'll say 8 or 9 year old kid sitting there playing. He knew the rules and he kind of knew what to do, but it was always somewhat uncomfortable because I always felt I couldn't really truly fully get into what I wanted to get into because, you know, there's a young child here. So as an adult, I need to behave myself more. And then B, I just kind of had some issues with it when we would, you know, when we play too late. I mean, sometimes we play until midnight and this kid is still up and I kept thinking this kid's got to go to bed. But, you know, that was my own personal parenting issue. But it definitely puts a hitch in, you know, the gaming table when they're actually there at the table gaming with you.
Now, see, Dan and I have had an opposite experience with that. We gamed with a friend of ours and he had 3 kids. Two of them were like 5, 6 years old, I guess, and one of them was a little newborn baby, so we won't count the little newborn baby. But, you know, we gamed with him and his wife at their place, and I remember that the kids would go off and they would kind of play with themselves, and of course they would get bored playing, and then they would come over and want to hang out with mom and dad, and they would hang out just, and mom and dad would say, okay, you know, just be quiet, you know, let's do our thing. And I remember having one of the kids on my lap, on my knee, bouncing them up and down while we were gaming.
See, I think, though, once again, it comes down to good parenting because...
And the disposition of the kid.
Yeah, the disposition of the kid. In the nurture versus nature debate, I'm a believer of both. So, yeah, some of it's going to be the disposition of the child.
People breed like horses.
Sometimes it's going to be the parent disciplining. But, you know, it strikes me, though, and I say this as someone who doesn't have children, but it strikes me, though, as you hit kind of this age where eventually the child is a little more self-entertaining, where you can, definitely, you know, I mean, an 18-month-old needs to be tended to, needs to be watched relatively constantly, doesn't understand what's going on, doesn't understand that mommy and daddy are gaming right now.
Whereas, I play Age of Conan all the time. When it's just me watching Sky Dawn's off doing something else. And, you know, we gate off the areas of the house where he isn't supposed to go. We baby proof everything.
Leave him on the stairs, and then
leave him on the stairs. So he just put him in the toilet
collection.
Yeah, and you know he goes
send him washer surfing.
I mean, he
throw him in the drying machine.
He's like 15 months old or so, and he goes into his room and he plays with the stuff, and then he gets bored after about 5 minutes. He comes in and you know I'm playing Age of Conan. He like hits me on the side. It's like him trying to get my attention. I give him some attention. Either I kind of stop and you know tickle him or laugh at him, and that's fine. And he goes off or he wants some more, and I put him up on my lap and I'm playing with one hand and kind of multitasking. Or he really wants a lot of attention. Then I'm just like, okay, AFK guys, and then I. You know, I play with it.
Of course, that's a little easier in an MMO than it is.
Yeah. Because
if you go AFK at a table, you've just kind of
stopped the game.
Yeah, the game stops.
It's not like I can walk out into the street and scream, RPG group LFM one more.
Yeah.
And so it's a little bit different. But, once again, not to espouse the TV as babysitter, but it strikes me that at this point you say, okay, well, why don't we bring a movie for you to watch?
Or when they're five or six.
Because then you can reason with them.
Once I was that old, it was the Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
I didn't want to talk to my parents or even see them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's no long-term damage that's going to be done if you're in that situation where, let them watch TV for, two or three hours. If it's just that one time, I think they'll be just fine.
And something I want to throw out here is if you are in an age to where this whole thing seems completely irrelevant to you because you're 17 years old or whatever. All I want to throw out is that there was a time when this was irrelevant to us as well.
Mm-hmm. And it is irrelevant to John as well.
It was.
It's no longer irrelevant, but that changes very quickly in your life, especially if someone at a young age ends up pregnant or gets in a relationship where someone else already brings the kid into the equation. But even if you wait to have kids until you're 20 something or 30 something, there is still going to come a time in your life in the not too distant future when this is going to be an issue for you.
Wow. Next on Oprah, how teen pregnancy affects gaming.
I'd watch the show. I'd be a guest on the show. Yes. But that aside,
one of my buddies brought his kid to my graduation party, but he's not a teen.
Mm-hmm. But anyways, that aside, I would say still, this is something you need to be thinking about because this is coming up in your life. And it will come quicker than you expect it to come. So,
no, you live fast and die hard, or whatever
lead
it is.
A good looking corpse.
Yeah, exactly. There dead by 18.
I called myself the Lizard King when I ran an XR guild in EQ2.
The Lizard King. I still call myself the Lizard King, but never mind.
That's just in the bedroom.
All right, let's move on from talking about little kids in gaming to talking about older kids in gaming. And let's
10 to teenagers.
Yeah, we're talking. Okay, that
your
works.
Tweens and teens.
Well, yeah. Kids who are old enough to where they maybe aren't going to be able to engage in the super mature, super dramatic kind of role playing that we prefer, but they're old enough to understand the game, to participate in the game, to understand the idea of gaming. Maybe you want to introduce them to the hobby. You want them to understand what gaming is, but they're not necessarily on the level of the rest of the people at the table. What do you do there? How do you get these kids into the hobby? How do you keep them interested?
You play
in the
something
hobby?
Nice and simple and softball and easy for slow people like Dragonlance.
Well, actually,
wow.
Actually, John is at least from my personal experience. I think John's correct.
Dragonlance was unwarranted. But no, seriously, play like Star Wars or D&D or something. Actually, what do you think, Chris?
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I would say I actually go even simpler. I can only speak from my personal experience, but I'm saying it on the Fear the Boot, so it's correct.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Hey, you're learning.
Yeah,
welcome to hosthood.
Excellent. This is awesome.
We're like
nice,
the Wikipedia
nice
of podcasting.
With my kids, we actually started off with HeroQuest.
HeroQuest is good.
Rally game, because it was a perfect introduction to dice mechanics. And how things like that work.
Very slightly freeform play.
Exactly, and that's what it was. There was enough of a little bit of a story that you weren't just marching around a board killing things. There was a little bit behind there because you had missions that you had to accomplish, and it brought a little bit of that teamwork element into play. And then, of course, me being an experienced role player, I tried to inject elements of that regular RP as you'd go through, and you'd meet the main the boss of that level that you would be on or whatever, and you'd throw a little bit of role playing in there, so they kind of got that. And then just really made that leap into the next step, which at least in my case was just 3.5. And going through the character creation process with the kids and talking about the benefits and disadvantages of, you know, this ability here and that ability there, and walking them through character creation and then, you know, actually doing some sort of adventure.
One of my first impulses here is to suggest doing things that are role-playing game-esque without getting into role-playing games like Hero Quest or going back to Ryan Dancy, The Secret Lives of Gingerbread Men and things like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I guess here, not having kids of any age, my best frame of reference is how I got into role-playing games. And in my case, I did not have any middle step, that I went straight from playing
video games.
We
played the old Infocom games.
Or playing Cops and Robbers or whatever out in the yard, mm-hmm. to I picked up Fast as Star Trek and went straight into a role-playing game. There was no step.
Oh, let me tell you, it was wonderful, too.
Well, you know, and it's...
for its time.
It well, yeah, and you've got to...
I still want to play Fast as Star Trek. It looks cool.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the games ran.
We're talking about the plots. Yeah. The game system, I wish, quite frankly, someone would reprint and
smooth it
out a little bit.
You still have yours, don't you?
Oh yeah, I do. I love running it. It's a great freaking game.
I wanted to run it this last time.
But it's a great freaking game. But I wish someone would kind of smooth out the rules. Particularly, I don't like the shield rules, but that's a whole nother tangent.
You don't like shields?
Well, no, actually, in Star Trek, I
don't like replicators and holodecks, but...
I don't like your mail.
Yeah, well, the replicator destroys the concept of an economy.
Well, I don't like ABBA.
I found a way around that, too.
Sure, that was cool. Don't be dissing ABBA.
The way I handled the replicators was they could only rearrange things at the molecular level, not the atomic level, so you couldn't create matter. But
they create matter on the ship.
Oh, they do, absolutely.
Okay,
I had
so it's not Star Trek.
No. It's just something I had to do to balance the game, because what's the point of gold-pressed latinum if you can just replicate as much of it as you like?
They never quite answer that on DS9, do
so
they?
So I just kind of, that's just sort of something I had to work around. But anyway,
I'm sure some geek out there
somewhere. The point is, you can run a game that a tween can understand.
Here's the point, though.
Games are really not all that complicated in the end.
Obviously, you have to bring down the level of the plot and the level of character development. You have to accept there's a reason why movies that are directed at the 10 to 15 crowd are different than the movies directed at the 20 to 50 crowd, and you have to take that into account in your role-playing game. But I don't know that necessarily you have to ease them into it with these kind of middling cons of, well, this is not quite a role-playing game, but by the
end
of it, you're like...
You don't have to con them, but Hero Quest is a good half-step between a straight board game and a straight role-playing game.
I think
it is a good transitional step.
The real good thing about Hero Quest is the DM can just go balls out and try to kill all the players, and his powers are limited. The complicated thing is getting someone who can run a game and run it right.
Yeah.
That's tough to do when you're little. I couldn't do it when I was little.
I think that Hero Quest is probably a good game for your tween, as they're called. But if you have teenagers, and Hero Quest would probably still be good, but I think that a game like Arkham Horror would be even better, because that is a freaking role-playing game without the actual role-playing. I mean, it's everything but it comes right to the line and then stops. And to me, if you get you get the teenagers to play a couple of games of that, it's an easy jump to a role-playing game.
Now, Chad, I know you have a wretched memory, so this...
Terrible.
May be chasing a 6-inch rabbit hole, but you got your start in role-playing actually kind of the way we're talking about. As I recall, you had, like me, no middle step games,
right?
But your very first game wasn't it like your uncle and a bunch of older guys?
The very first character I made was that 3-hour character story with Tex and me and Star Trek.
I thought you played.
No. We didn't play.
Oh.
I made my first character. And that again, that's the 3-hour story where we made a character over the course of 3 hours where you cut the grass. A week or two after that, before we started playing the Star Trek game, I have 4 aunts and uncles, an aunt and an uncle, and then another aunt and an uncle, and with one of their daughters. And they had 2 friends, and these are all those geeky fat beard type people from the 60s and 70s. Like, one of the guys on there is on the Archon committee and has been on the Archon committee since its beginning in the 70s when they had Stephen King there and stuff. And
so, like, everyone at the Icon banquet,
pretty much. And they're great people and stuff, and they were running, they knew I was into like sci-fi and stuff, and they thought I was geeky, and they asked me to play. And they were running a Ravenloft module.
Yeah, back when Ravenloft was a module, not a setting, back when it was a module for D&D.
And I'm sure I've told this story before on air, and I was like, I was this spazzed out, totally wacky teenager who wasn't getting the concept quite, you know, about the role playing and stuff. Right. And they were kind of doing a dungeon crawl with his castle, you know, clear loot, check for traps, clear loot, check for traps, clear loot, check for traps. And there wasn't much actual story. I was playing a fighter and somebody was playing a thief and they didn't have names and that sort of thing. But
was Elf a class?
No, it wasn't that early.
No, this would have been second edition.
Yep.
Go Red Box.
Yep.
This would have been, I think, even advanced second edition.
Yeah, it was fun. It was good times. I don't know if
Chris, what was your first time?
I didn't know if they stopped role playing or they were continuing to role play, but just weren't inviting me back. And you know what? And I say this still to this day. I do not blame them in any way for not inviting me back. I would not have invited me back. Now, you know, of course, then I was the man.
You know, and I think it's one of those things where if you want to introduce someone who's that age into role-playing games, assuming they're not uniquely mature and calm for their age, you have to have one of two things.
And I was not uniquely calm or mature.
Either what
age.
Chad and I have, which is a group of people the same age, so we're all spastic little teens together, or you have to have a parent's patience.
Yes.
That's one of the two.
Yes.
You know, one thing I recommend when it comes to, having your tween or even your early teen create their characters, if you can find a copy of Shadowrun 2nd Edition, or I think it was probably even in Earthdawn 1st Edition, there's a section in there in character creation where it's just, all it is, it's 20 questions. And I found this, and I've translated and brought it with me for years through all the games I've ever run, all the campaigns and things. And it's 20 questions to ask yourself about your character. And it runs through just a very basic checklist.
And it gives you an orphan whose parents were killed by orcs and now is questing for vengeance with his new fighter sword.
But see, exactly. You can go through it, but
Fighter sword.
But it runs through the things about, you know, what about your character's family? What is your character afraid of? What is your character like? All these things that this person as a player may not necessarily think of, but it allows you as a GM to put this in front of them and they can look at it and read it and think about it, and you can sit there and throw things out and feed it to them, and without it being overwhelming, because it's just a structured list of questions they need to answer. But it does create for some interesting things, you know. And really, when it comes to the actual sessions, again, I would say really when it comes to it, just be prepared for anything. I mean, granted, you're supposed to as a GM, but you kind of know when you sit down with even some inexperienced adults, they're going to be able to pick up on plot hooks very quickly and be able to see the story that you're kind of laying out there in front of them.
And force someone to be the cleric and the traps. And, you know.
Kids, I like playing clerics.
Kids not necessarily are going to see that. My daughter's a great example of this, and this isn't a diss on her not being able to see the plot. Earlier in the adventure, they had captured a horse that they had brought with them. They'd been able to get it kind of healed up because it was slightly injured, but they had made it to this big city. And
no, wait, now hold on, because I think there's actually a good point in here. We were just talking a minute ago about making the game right for the audience.
Yes.
And so you added a plot point that was caring for a horse for a young girl. And
actually, she created that as being a plot point. The horse was captured, and I gave that to them as regular treasure booty. They had got that, but you know, it wasn't even a war horse. It was a riding horse, so it wasn't that great, but. Yet she wanted to keep that horse, and it became very important to her, and to discredit to me, I didn't pay as much attention to that. And so when we're sitting there on the table, and I'm trying to feed her and her brother plot hooks as to where they kind of needed to go next, she says to me, she points at the map of the city, and she goes, I want to ride my horse around here. And that's all she wanted to do, was get on her horse that had been finally healed, and she wanted to ride the horse around this part of town just to see what was going on. She didn't care a lick about the plot that I had laid out. She didn't care anything about all the little sub hooks that I'd put in there. She just wanted to ride her horse around town.
There's precedent in Bill the Pony. I'll allow it.
It's because you were playing, you know, Kingdom of the Dark Avatar, and she was playing, oh my god, ponies!
She was playing Belisera.
Yes.
OMG, ponies.
She can make a cameo in my Belisera kickoff fiction.
But yeah, but it totally caught me off guard, and I didn't even necessarily know how to deal with it, because I thought to myself, how am I going to, what do I do now? That area of the town wasn't necessarily developed, you know.
So it's horse farm town.
Yeah, no kidding. It's like, you go with your audience, man. We were having a discussion in my class one time, it was a business class, and we were supposed to come up with a business, and we each pitched a business to each other, and this guy was pitching a business, and he's like, it was called a Carb-O, and it was back when that Atkins diet craze was going on, and he was talking about, you know how you go into some restaurants and they have all this pasta and bread and all this stuff, and me and this guy, and this guy next to me was rather portly, and I'm kind of fat myself, and we were going, yeah, yeah, and you know how it's like all bread and carbs, they're like, yeah, and he's like, and we're like, oh, this sounds like a great restaurant, yeah, it talks about it. And he's like, yeah, my restaurant doesn't have any of that. We're like, oh,
screw you.
and then the teacher's like, dude, you had them. Your investors were hooked. You know, it's like you. And he's like, but that wasn't my business model. And then he's like,
no,
you change your business
matter.
Model. And that's the same thing. You know, it's like, and like you said, Chris, you know, kind of shame on you as the GM, but it's just like you see your players, and of course you have multiple people, and you have all this preparedness and all this notes and stuff that you spent 3 months doing. Don't be afraid to throw them out the window. Especially for kids, because you think you might have a player who's 42 in your group who has a short attention span. That's nothing compared to a teenager. So
you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Have the horse get captured or something. Yeah, you want to see your daughter respond to a plot point.
You got to be, when you're running a game for a kid, not that I've ever run a game for kids, but you know, you got to be fast on your feet and not hold yourself to, you know, copious note taking and such.
I think that's going to wrap it up for this show. So thank you guys for tuning in. Be sure to pick up a copy of Dark Knight, and also look for that link in the show notes for the Justifiers conversion, so you can start learning that game for our first deconstruction episode, which is coming up here in the next few weeks.
Now, the first one is going to be Dark Knight Returns. Second one's going to be Justifiers.
Right. Which, so,
can I just do one end shout out here to great Harvey Korman? I just Blazing Saddles was one of those core gamer movies for me. That that, along with Holy Grail, it was just one of the ones that you constantly quoted around the gaming table. And Harvey Korman was definitely,
if it was a racially homogenous gaming table, that is.
Oh well, even if it wasn't, it was still, you know, me being Irish and not being denied land in Blazing Saddles. You know, I was okay with that.
What was Harvey Korman's French character called in History of the World? It's some pun, and they
it's
kept
like the Mercury Grand Marquis or something like that. Yeah. I don't remember what it was.
Count the money. Yeah, yes, T-Bone A. It was great.
All right, so thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya, Harvey.
Later days.
And George Carlin. Bye.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.